1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 10 to 24. To the married, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. A wife must not separate from her husband. But if she does, she must remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. And a husband must not divorce his wife. To the rest, I say this, I, not the Lord. If any brother has a wife who is not a believer, and she is willing to live with him, he must not divorce her. And if a woman has a husband who is not a believer, and he is willing to live with her, she must not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband has been sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy. And if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or the sister is not bound in such circumstances. God has called us to live in peace. How do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches. Was a man already circumcised when he was called? He should not become uncircumcised. Was a man uncircumcised when he was called? He should not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. Keeping God's commands is what counts. Each person should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let it trouble you. Although if you can gain your freedom, do so. For the one who was a slave when called to faith in the Lord is the Lord's freed person. Similarly, the one who was free when called is Christ's slave. You were bought as a price. Do not become slaves of human beings. Brothers and sisters, each person, as responsible to God, should remain in the situation they were in when God called them.
Well, good evening, everybody. Do keep that passage open from 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We'll have a think about that in a moment. After the sermon, there'll be a chance to ask questions about this passage or the couple of passages preceding this if you've been here for the last few weeks. So do feel free to stick up your hand and ask from the floor, or if you'd rather ask anonymously, you can do so through the Pigeonhole app, which you can just point your phone at the QR code or go to the website and type in the code Ask the Preacher. So, let's make a start. Now, for obvious reasons, we've called this sermon Marriage Matters. We're thinking a bit about what Paul says to the people in the church in Corinth who were married. But I'd like to start with a story. You see, there's a story of a little kid who lived in a house on one side of a valley. It was a normal sort of house in the countryside where the kid had his own room, plenty of space for toys, nice garden, and had lovely views over the valley. And on a clear day, the kid could see from one side of the valley to the other. It was beautiful and picturesque, a beautiful house in a beautiful spot. But one morning, the kid was looking out of the window over the valley in the dawn light and noticed something amazing. He saw another house on the other side of the valley, and his mouth fell open in shock, because the house wasn't like a normal house. This house had golden windows, not just painted yellow, but so bright and shiny that they glowed. And the kid looked at it and his heart went, wow, what a house, that's amazing. He could feel the tingle of excitement in his fingers. It was the most beautiful house he'd ever seen. The trouble was, once this kid had seen the house with the golden windows, he couldn't unsee it. Every morning, he'd come downstairs and look through the window, and there would be the house with the golden windows. Every morning, his heart would start to tell him, well, if only I could live there. And as he looked at his own house, it seemed less and less special compared to the house with the golden windows. There was nothing wrong with it, but it wasn't the same as the house on the other side of the valley. He couldn't see the details because it was too far away, but he was sure that the garden would be bigger, the rooms would be nicer, that the house would just be perfect. So much better than where he was currently living. Every time he looked, his heart got heavier and heavier. His mind started buzzing and buzzing and buzzing until eventually he just couldn't take it any longer. He knew that he had to leave where he was and go to the house on the other side of the valley. And I wonder, have you ever felt like that boy in the story? Where you've looked at another place, another situation, and thought, oh, what I've got now, well, it's just not as good as what it could be, that thing over there. If only I lived like that, my life would be so much, insert whatever positive adjective you can think of, the here. And I guess we might feel like that as Christians as well. It's really easy for all of us to think, well, I could serve God so much better if this thing changed in my life. And the Corinthian Christians were thinking that as well. They were looking at their own lives and thinking that if God changed their circumstances somehow, well, they'd be more able to live for him. They would be holier. They'd pray more, read their Bibles more, but they would be better believers. It's a good intention. It's a good desire. And in some ways, I want to say, great. But as we'll see, they've got really confused. They've got really confused, and they've turned this desire to live holy lives, and they've pushed it too far. They've taken this desire and they've tried to apply it into practice, particularly into the area of marriage. And you see, the married believers think that they'll be so much more able to serve God, well, if they were single, if they weren't married anymore, and so they were thinking about getting divorced. But God says, no, Christians should stay married. Well, why? Well, the key verse is verse 17. It's the verse that kind of underscores this whole passage. Each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God called them. And that's our first point, that married Christians should stay married. Let me read those verses again, starting at verse 10. To the married, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. A wife must not separate from her husband. But if she does, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And a husband should not divorce his wife. Now, Paul writes first to married couples where both are Christians. And Paul says that the Lord commands these people not to leave each other. They're not to separate, as verse 10 says, or get divorced, as verse 11 says. Notice this isn't Paul's opinion. It's the Lord's command. Christians are to commit to marriage whatever life throws at them. And it's what we see throughout the Old Testament, and it's what we see in Jesus' teaching, such as Matthew 19, verse 6, where Jesus says, therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. If you see a marriage in a Church of England church, you'll hear those words read. God has joined these people together in marriage, and so therefore, they're to stay together. Which is why we get those words at the start of verse 11, that a believer who leaves their husband should stay unmarried or be reconciled. God has joined them together, so work at staying together. Some of the Corinthian Christians seem to have got it into their heads that they could be holier in their service of God if they got divorced, that their prayer life would be better, that they'd be better evangelists if they didn't have a husband or wife. Now, imagine a two-person relay race. When you line up at the start of the race, you know, you get ready on the start line and your teammate stations themselves at the required point further down the track. Now, you've got the baton in your hand, ready to pass it over to them. But imagine if you're getting ready and suddenly you start having doubts about your teammates. You know, maybe they're not at the top of their game. You saw them warming up and they looked a bit stiff or maybe a bit ill. Maybe you think they've not been as committed in their training as they should have been or they in some way they weren't prepared for the race. So the gun goes off and you start racing. And, you know, you're going really well. You're leading your field. And then you come to the handover area and you think, well, actually, I'm not going to hand over the baton. Actually, I'm going well, I'm leading my bit of the race, I'm just going to carry on. And so you plough past your teammate because actually it's better without them. Now, I don't actually know if you'd be disqualified for doing that, but regardless of whether you are or not, you've missed the point of a relay race, haven't you? The whole point is that you're in it together. You work as a team and you succeed as a team. The Corinthians have been looking at their spouses and they seem to think that they'll be better off alone, running the race by themselves, forgetting that God has called them to live for him in whatever moment he called them in. If God has joined a married couple together, then that's how they can serve the Lord. They can live a holy life in that situation. They don't need to get unmarried to be better in some way. And I think this implies how we should be thinking as a church about people who are married. You know, we should be seeking to support and encourage them. You know, because that's their way of living for the Lord. And so we can encourage married couples to take care of their marriage. And when we pray for married friends, it's right to pray that their marriage would remain strong and faithful to each other because that's how God has called them to live a holy life. Married Christians should stay married, but what if a believer is married to a non-believer? Well, that's where Paul turns next. He says married Christians should stay married to non-Christians. Look at verse 12. To the rest I say this, and I, not the Lord. If any brother has a wife who is not a believer, and she is willing to live with him, he must not divorce her. And if a woman has a husband who is not a believer, and he is willing to live with her, she must not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband has been sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise your children will be unclean. But as it is, they are holy. But if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or sister is not bound in such circumstances. God has called us to live in peace. How do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? We sometimes think that Christians being married to non-Christians is potentially a new thing, but it's not. It's something that's been going on since the very beginning of the church. And Paul says that if a Christian is married to a non-Christian, they should stay married to them. If the non-Christian is happy to carry on, then the Christian should remain happy, should stay committed too. But if they leave, the Christian should let them go. It'll be a time of sadness, but the key is living in peace with them, whether they remain married to them or not. Now, one of the surprising things of Paul's words is that it's good for a non-Christian to stay married to a believer. Now, in some ways, it sanctifies them, makes them holy, just as it also makes their children holy, as verse 14 says. Now, I want to be clear. Just being married to a Christian doesn't automatically grant a non-Christian a place in heaven. In the same way, a child who has a believing parent isn't automatically granted a place in heaven either. You can see that in verse 16. If a spouse were automatically made a Christian by association, why would Paul introduce an element of doubt about whether they'll be able to be saved? It doesn't automatically make them a Christian, but it is good for them. When I was a university student, I lived with a friend of mine called Rich. We'd been at school together. We had next door rooms to each other, which was great. It was lovely sharing with someone that I knew well. But it also caused a certain amount of stress because my friend Rich, in his spare time, was an amateur club DJ, and his practice deck was set up with the speakers on the other side of the wall from my pillow. I spent many hours listening to the sound of endless mixes as he prepared for the next set he was playing, and going to sleep with the sort of thump, thump, thump just inches away from my head. Honestly, there were moments where it was unbelievably annoying, but it did have a surprising effect on me. Now, I'm probably not the most natural person you think of going to a nightclub. But after that time with Rich, listening to him at home and seeing him DJing in different places, I started to have an appreciation of the music and went to see him a few times and started enjoying going. To the point that I'll still listen to club music now, even, you know, over a decade later. It's become something I enjoy, even if I'll readily admit that I'm not an expert. That exposure, that time together, well, it changed my musical tastes. And I suspect I'm not alone. If you've lived with someone, you've probably picked up something from them, whether that's a spouse, a parent, whatever. We rub off on each other. I think that's what Paul's thinking of in verse 16. As someone lives out their faith, demonstrating the goodness of it, other people come to appreciate it. And some might even come to believe. And someone married to a Christian has constant exposure to them living out their faith. They're prayed for regularly. They're invited to church things, and Lord willing, it might even help them come to know Christ for themselves. Married Christians should stay married to non-Christians. I guess the temptation is to think that they could be the better Christians if they left. But Paul says, well, no. If you're married, stay married, as long as your non-Christian spouse is happy. And again, as a church, we can be supporting those who are in this situation, encouraging them, helping them. And we can particularly pray for their witness. They are on the front line, sharing their faith with their spouse. Now, whether a Christian is married to a believer or not, Paul's point is clear from these verses. Married Christians should stay married. And this directs us to a wider point Paul is making about how a believer is to live. He says, well, Christians can follow God whatever their personal circumstances. You look on at verse 17. Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned them, just as God has called them. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches. Was a man already circumcised when he was called? He should not become uncircumcised. Was a man uncircumcised when he was called? He should not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. Keeping God's commands is what counts. Each person should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Now, verses 17 and 20, I think, are key to understanding this passage, as I mentioned earlier. God called each person in their specific personal situation. And because they were called in that situation, they can live a holy life in that situation. Their goal should be living as a believer as they are. And that's why he gives the example of circumcision in verses 18 and 19. There's no need for an uncircumcised man to get himself circumcised when he comes to faith, nor the circumcised man to be uncircumcised. Why? Well, because holiness is possible in each situation. The important thing is keeping God's commands in each moment. Sometimes I think we can think a bit like this. So imagine you go for a job interview. It's a job you're really interested in, and it's a position you'd really like to get. But you get that sense, don't you, when you know an interview is going really badly. Like, it's not just you're doubting yourself, it's genuinely this is going terribly. And after the interview, the manager calls you and you think, oh gosh, here we go. You're getting ready to be rejected. But they say to you, well, we'd like to offer you the job. We weren't impressed by you, and we don't think you can do the job, but we think you might have potential in a few years' time and you might be able to do it. Now, it's not exactly what you call a ringing endorsement, is it? If you take the job, you're going to spend your whole time worried about whether you're developing as they expect. You know, have you made enough progress this time? Have you developed sufficiently? You know, what if you can't get to the stage you need to be in the time frame allotted? What if you never get there? Well, what then? And I think sometimes we can think the Christian life is like that. You know, that we've been offered a job, but we need to develop into something better in order to keep God happy. You know, I'm in the situation, but I need a better home life or a better personal situation in order to really please God. We need to remember that God has called each of us to live for Him just as we are. You don't have to have, I don't know, a university degree or a PhD or a, you know, some sort of academic qualification. You don't need to have a job with a kind of threshold. You don't need any of those things. If God called you, He wants you just as you are. That's true for our personal situations. It's true whether we're married or single. God chose you just as you are and made you righteous in His eyes by the death of His Son. He chose you, and we're called to live for Him now. That's true of our personal circumstances. And as we finish, it's true of our social circumstances. Christians can follow God whatever their social circumstances. Verse 21. Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let it trouble you. Although if you can gain your freedom, do so. For the one who was a slave when called to faith in the Lord is the Lord's freed person. Similarly, the one who was free when called is Christ's slave. You were bought at a price. Do not become slaves of human beings. Brothers and sisters, each person, as responsible to God, should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Paul says, a believer's social situation doesn't make a difference to their ability to follow God. You know, in the Roman world, you've got two kind of major social divisions between slaves and free. And sure, if a slave can get free, they should do so, but it doesn't matter if they can't. They are just as much a Christian as the free person sitting next to them in the church service. And that was one of the unusual things about church from the very beginning, that you had free people and slaves sat next to each other, interacting in a way that they could never do so elsewhere in society. It's what we see in churches across the land and down history, where you have lords and ladies with farm laborers and every other bracket of social division you can think of in between. There's no hierarchy of believers in the church. As verse 24 says, each person should stay as they are because they were called by God as they are. And I think this is wonderfully encouraging. If you're a Christian, you were bought at a price. Jesus died on the cross for who you are right now. Jesus didn't die for the potential that you showed. Jesus didn't give His life as a sort of spread bet across the congregation, you know, as if He hoped that a few of us might work out, but, well, you know, it's a shame about those who don't. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Jesus died for each of us to call us to serve him just as we are. We don't need a better personal situation or a different personal situation. We can serve the Lord just as we are right now. And sure, things might change in our lives, but they also might not. The important thing is that we live for him right here, right now. Let's go back to the story that we started with the kid setting off from his house towards the house with the golden windows. And the kid took the long walk across the valley, and finally, after many hours, he arrived at the house on the other side of the valley. And when he got there, he was shocked. And the house with the golden windows turned out to be, well, just a normal house. When he got there, there was no sign of the gold that he'd seen across the valley. The glass was just normal glass. The window frames were just normal window frames. The house was an ordinary house, just like his own. And as he turned back towards his own house, he received another shock. As he looked back, he could see his own house, bathed in the glorious afternoon sun. And it looked magnificent. The garden looked lush and green. The house inviting, the windows shone with gold as the light reflected off them. The child thought that the home would be better on the other side of the valley. And we're constantly tempted to think that in our faith too. It would be easy, wouldn't it, to think that the grass is greener in another way of living, that faithfulness would be easier or better if... But that's just not true. We're all tempted to think like that, whether it's about marriage or singleness, whether it's about family life or work life, or whatever are the particular struggles of our lives, whatever are the particular situations of our lives. And so my question is for you is, what's your struggle? What do you wish would change? But as we think about that, we must also remember that God calls us to live for him just as we are. So let's live for today. Let's rejoice in God's call of each of us, seeking to live as faithfully as we can right now. And let's pray for one another. Let's have that prayer and that desire for one another. As our passage started, let's pray for those who are married, that they'd be faithful in their situations. And let's pray for one another that we'd serve God faithfully in whatever circumstance that he calls us. Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned them, just as God called them.